This week on Podcast Royal, we share our thoughts on Prince Harry's memoir, Spare, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Should he have written the book? Will it cause irreparable damage to the monarchy? And what about the coronation? We talk through it all right here on episode 82.
Welcome back to Podcast Royal. How are you, Rachel?
I'm good. I'm fresh off of having a really nice dinner with you 2 days ago, and your birthday is this week. So happy early birthday to you.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited. And I'm doing well myself. We did have a great dinner at one of our favorite Mexican places the other night. And we also had a really wonderful podcast interview this morning that we'll have coming out soon for listeners. And I think everybody's going to love that interview. I'm really
it's
excited.
So good. It's so good. It's just with someone, I don't want to reveal it, but it's just with someone that is so iconic in the royal world. Like, just to hear stories of like this person interacting with the different royals and what they were like. And this person is such a part of history. I loved the interview. I can't wait to air it. I hate that it's going to be a couple weeks before we can, but I can't wait for everyone to hear that.
Well, in the meantime, we've got a pretty incredible episode ahead of us that I'm pretty sure our listeners are excited to hear. And also, before we jump into that, I do want to share a review that we received since our last episode. So we got a great review on Apple that says, "I recently discovered this podcast and I'm slowly catching up on a lot of the back episodes. So much information on the British royals while also introducing me to some other royal families as well. I appreciate that this podcast covers the complicated story of Meghan." So thank you so much for that kind review.
That's one way to put it. Thank you for that review.
And of course, we welcome any others. Of course, we like to read them here on the podcast. So shall we go ahead and get into our discussion of Spare?
Yeah, let's do it, because we really don't have much else to say. There's nothing else in the royal rundown. There's nothing really that we're going to cover today in royals around the world. The royal family has been laying relatively low since Spare's publication on January 10th. Kate had a birthday. Happy belated birthday to the Princess of Wales. And Kate and William have started to kind of come out slowly with their engagements for 2023. But again, there's just really not a whole lot to say other than to talk about the book. So that's going to be the entirety of this episode. Let's get into it. As I said, this will take up the entire royal rundown. So we had to organize our discussion because, listeners, if you know us, if we don't do that, then we'll just riff forever. And we don't really want to stay here forever. Like, this is not hopefully going to be an hour long episode, but we have prepared some questions for ourselves to keep us on track. So do you want to ask the questions? Do you want to be Barbara Walters journalist interview here?
We can do that. So for listeners, Harry's people didn't get back to my people. But no, we can't get them on the podcast. So we figured we would sort of structure this like we do when we interview other authors and just kind of queue up a few questions to ask ourselves. I'll do that. Yeah. And the first, so we'll share a little and then we'll move on to the next topic. But the first one that we want to hit on is some quick overall feelings after reading the book. And we're definitely just going on the fly here. We haven't prepped. So this is just kind of an open conversation. So go ahead, Rachel, you can get started.
Yeah. So I had pre-ordered the book and I got it from Amazon. I don't know, probably in the early evening of Tuesday. And so I think I remember texting with you that I was watching basketball, and then finally I got into it and then I couldn't put it down. So I was up really late reading it. As I told you at dinner the other night with the docuseries, I think however you walked into viewing the Netflix docuseries is how you walked out. Meaning, if you walked in liking the Sussexes or a fan of the Sussexes, you probably walked out of that viewing still liking them. If you walked in disliking the Sussexes, you probably walked out disliking the Sussexes still. And if you didn't have an opinion on the Sussexes, then you probably did not watch it. But with Spare, I personally found myself backsliding in my opinion of Harry. And what's the point of having this conversation if we're not going to be honest? So we're going to be brutally honest here. Everyone has a right, speaking about Harry, not my truth, but everyone, and I mean, I have a right to my truth as well, but everyone has a right to their truth. Harry has a right to tell his story. He certainly did that. But there was so much of the book that seemed salacious to me, definitely in regards to others, most particularly William, but even about himself. Example, I did not need to have 15 Todger references, to use the British nickname for the part of a male anatomy. I didn't even need to have one, actually. And honestly, because of the leaks that had come out the week before, by the time I read the book, I wasn't surprised about much when it came to the book. So, you know, I love reading biographies, autobiographies, memoirs, and this was certainly interesting, but did it move the needle forward for my opinion of Harry? Not necessarily. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with what you've said. I think you made some really good points. So for me, and we'll talk a little bit about our experiences and how they differ in reading this book, but it, like, I really didn't expect it to do this, but it sort of took me on a little bit of an emotional roller coaster. And, you know, some of that comes from having, you know, followed a little bit about Harry in the past and, you know, remembering him, you know, seeing him in the news when I was younger and knowing little bits and pieces of his life, but not really knowing that backstory. And so there were a few times during the book where I found myself tearing up for different reasons. And there were a few times when I was like annoyed and I was like, why are you saying this or doing this? And then, you know, and so I just, and then I laughed a few times during the book as well. So it was sort of all over the place, which, you know, maybe that's what a book is supposed to do.
I want to interject here really quickly and say that I think that it makes a huge difference. I know we're about to, cause we do have like a little bullet point agenda of what we're going to talk about tonight, but I think it makes a huge difference, and this cannot be understated, of how we consumed the book. So I read it, you listen to the audiobook. So I think that I didn't cry at all. You know, I didn't laugh at all. Exactly. I think that makes a difference.
And we'll chat about that next as well. And I do think that had a difference. I thought the book was written pretty well. I know, you know, he had a ghostwriter help him with that part. Mm-hmm. It did leave me walking away with a lot of questions. And I felt there was a lot in the book that could have been and should have been left out, which we'll get into as well. I thought some of the things he included in that book, specifically in reference to his family and, you know, as you said, some of the more salacious stuff, didn't help the book at all. I thought it took away from the story. And then to me, I felt like it was a continuation of this, like maybe reputation repair, you know, I mean, I felt like that with the Netflix series, like, you know, in the interviews that Megan did, it was an effort to fix maybe public opinion of her. And I thought that this book went there as well. And it was Harry's attempt to sort of do some damage repair, which I don't think should have been the aim of the book at all.
Well, I don't think he succeeded. I mean, like, I'm not sure that he accomplished that goal.
Exactly.
I actually have always liked Harry. I mean, I've always liked Harry from the time I was a kid. I liked Harry less after reading this book. And I hate to say that, but it's just how I feel. And
well, and I've said that on the podcast before too. Like growing up, you know, watching the two brothers, like I was a Harry fan. He was, you know, a favorite of mine. And so I do, you know, I do have some, I don't know, sympathy for him. You know, and some of the stuff that he's experienced.
Sure.
And I, like a lot of, I would say, the British public, you know, how he's talked about how they kind of took them, I guess the public took him and William kind of under their wing when they were young after they lost their mom. I think a lot of people have that sort of I don't know, like gentleness toward him, and we really want to see him do well and be happy. And of course, sure, that's still there.
Yeah, of
So.
course I want to see him do well and be happy, but I also don't really want to see him get paid millions of dollars to disparage. It just, again,
Exactly.
it feels like a one-sided fight. You know, they talk about the one-sided fight. I say they, meaning Harry, talks about the one-sided physical altercation between he and William. Well, this book is a one-sided fight, you know, because the royal family's not going to hit back. And so it seems like a bit of an unfair fight to me.
Well, and he knows that too.
Of course he knows that. Yeah, I mean, and we haven't heard a word from the royal family, and we're not going to, I don't think. And
So, you know,
we'll get.
I want to hit on that too. I actually, when the book was first, I think the first copy was leaked or whatever, and we were hearing bits and pieces of stories, I sort of had changing thoughts on what we were going to see come from the palace. Initially, I thought, oh my gosh, based on what we're hearing, you know, they're going to have to break tradition of never complain, never explain. Like, we're in a new time. They're going to have to come up and say something. They can't just, you know, let it go. And then the more things came out, and then the book was released, and the more, I mean, how many interviews are we up to now? The more interviews we've continued to hear, I've started to change my thoughts on that. And I think the more that they're quiet, they don't really have to say anything. All these interviews and all these comments are speaking for themselves. And I think a lot of people are really, you know, really maybe taking up for the royal family a little bit. People feel kind of what they're going through, and I don't even think they need to come out and say a statement.
Well, you know, most of the book is about the sibling rivalry between William and Harry. And I don't have siblings. You have a sister, but so I'll ask you, this is a rhetorical question to you or anybody with siblings, is that would you want comments that your brother or sister made to you, or that you made to your brother or sister when you were 15, to be put in a memoir that is the fastest selling memoir in history in the UK and the US and Canada? I mean, like, it's just, I mean,
No,
I don't
and you
want
know
them
what,
to been like,
Rachel? That goes beyond a brother and sister. If you've got a close friend or another family member, everyone has like their not so shining moments. You know, you say things in the heat of the moment that maybe you regret or whatever. And as a sibling or as a close friend, like you don't rub that back in their face later in life when they're an adult. You know, like you just don't do that. And so I don't know. I totally agree with you. I don't think that was fair.
Well, let's move on to our different experiences consuming the content. So I read the physical copy. You read the audiobook. I haven't listened to the audiobook. That's on. I've told you when you started, you said, I'm going to do the audiobook. I go, that is a huge commitment to listen to him read his own life story for 16 hours. But what was your experience with the audiobook?
Yeah, it was 16 hours. So I had to break it up into chunks over several days, and that allowed me to, you know, multitask a little bit too while I listened to it. But I'm glad I did listen to the audiobook. I got to hear it, as you said, in his voice. You know, I mean, you could tell he was reading a book. It didn't really sound exactly like he was just having a conversation with me and telling a story. But you know, I do think that hearing him talk about it did sort of immerse me a little bit more into the story that was being told. And I did find myself feeling very sympathetic for him during several parts of his life, you know, specifically when he lost his mother. That was a time when I caught myself tearing up, you know, and some of his stories just having different experiences throughout life, different relationships, and you know, and I really did enjoy hearing those parts of the story. And I felt like, well, we'll talk more about what he chose to include in the book. But yeah, I'm glad I listened to the audio version, and I do think it helped me feel like I was a little bit more into the story than if I had just read it. And I was more sympathetic to, again, like how he's experienced harassment from the press, how he's felt sort of trapped, and how he's felt, you know, this this trauma and grief from losing his mother, I did feel very sympathetic to him during those parts of the story.
Yeah. Well, do you want to Barbara Walters, may she rest in peace, ask the next question?
Yeah, well, I want to hear about, do you have any more comments about your experience reading it? Did you have those same sort of emotions or?
Not really. And I almost wonder if I should listen to the audiobook because it's black and white words on a page, you know? I mean, and yes, you can definitely, here's the thing. The black and white words on a page, physical copy, those were written by somebody else, right? They were written by J.R. Moeringer, the ghostwriter. And while Harry was obviously very involved, I think he said that he and J.R. had 50 plus Zoom interviews. That's written by somebody else. But when you listen to the audiobook, that's read by Harry himself. So it sounds like Harry because it is Harry. I mean, he may not have verbatim written those words, but to me, I don't know if it was just the mood I was in or the fact that I inhaled it in one night, but it didn't give me the emotional impact that you had, which I regret. I mean obviously you can't read about him losing his mom at 12 and not have, you know, an emotional reaction, but I certainly didn't cry or anything like that.
Well, I think ultimately we both still walked away from the book with sort of having the same feelings overall though, and being on the same page in that part at least. So, all right, we'll move on to the next question here. What do you think about the way he portrayed some of the members of the royal family? I know we've kind of touched on that, but let's go a little bit deeper.
If I'm William, I'm so hurt. It's not even that I'm angry. I'm hurt. I'm betrayed. This is my brother. And he has aired dirty laundry going back to when they were teenagers. And I find it interesting that the book starts when he's 12 and Diana dies. So it's like his whole childhood is erased, basically. Like, we don't really hear about anything prior to her death. It's like that I don't know if it was a happy childhood, but, you know, he loved his mother, had a, you know, relatively, I guess, you know, complicated as any sibling relationship is, especially the heir and the spare dynamic. But I mean, his whole childhood doesn't even exist really in this book. If I'm William, I'm very hurt. I think Charles got off really easily. I've heard that Charles didn't get off so easily, but then after the queen died and Charles became the monarch, out of respect to that position, they went back and edited some things out. I thought Charles, you know, I think he got off easier than I thought he would. Camilla and especially Kate, I feel like they got really sideswiped. I think Kate, and I think you'll probably talk about this later, but like the just dragging her and William for that matter into the Nazi costume, like that, just the lack of self-awareness there and the lack of ownership of that decision to put on that costume and blaming William and Kate for like quote unquote signing off on it. That did not strike me well. And then, you know, the lip gloss story with Meghan, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You don't need that story. That doesn't move the narrative of your life at all. Like that story is just in there to sell books, honestly, which it did, you know. I mean, it's like I said, it's the best-selling autobiography memoir in the UK, US and Canada. So good for them. They accomplished their goal. They certainly made back their money, I'm sure. But I just thought that it was unnecessary digs. We said this at dinner the other night. Look, I am all for love. I am a romantic. I love when men love their wives. But the way that Harry hero worships Meghan is weird to me, to be quite frank with you. It's like it's and vice versa too. I mean, it's just like Meghan is a demigod to him. And Meghan can do no wrong. And I appreciate men that love their wives. I really do. But speaking of Meghan, not only that, but as a wife. So if my husband comes to me with this draft of this memoir, I would have some problems with some of the things Harry says in the book. either I was talking about this with someone, and then I talked about it with you the other night. Either Megan doesn't have as much control as we think, which I don't think that's the case, to be honest with you, or it feels like she's really not doing him any favors by letting some of this stuff go. I mean, yes, it is his memoir. Ultimately, it's his story. You can't sit there and tell someone, take this out, put this in. But as a loving wife, I would say, do you really need to tell the world that your penis was frostbitten at your brother's wedding? Like, does that move the needle on your story at all? It just things like that. And yet Harry still seems to think that he and the royal family will mend fences. He even said in one of his feels like millions of post-book interviews that he thinks the royal family will thank him for spare one day, which seems a little bit out of touch. And he also said in that same interview, this is with the Sunday Times, that he had enough material for a second book. And the book ended up being, I think, 416 pages, that he had 800 pages total. And what he left on the cutting room floor, the royal family would never forgive him for. So I just think there were a lot of hit jobs happening here. I wanted to read about Harry, and I did, obviously, but there were a lot of bombs dropped, especially on William, and then a lot of really like below the belt digs that just didn't really need to be there about Kate, Camilla, and even Charles to a degree. So what do you think?
So I agree with everything you just said. That was my takeaway as well. You mentioned a chunk of his childhood not being mentioned in the book, and we actually went back and forth.
His entire childhood.
Yeah, about the difference between an autobiography versus a memoir, and if they are in fact.
Can you explain that? Because I think that's interesting. I'd never heard that before you said that the other night.
So I've always understood an autobiography to be the full picture of someone's life from start to end and being very factually based. And a memoir, I believe the difference there is it is obviously it's from someone's memory, right? So it, like, I don't know that it would necessarily have embellishment, but it's their perspective, which could be different than the truth. And it's also could be a clip of their life. It doesn't have to be from beginning up until, you know, the end or the present moment. It could be how they remember a certain time when something happened in their life. So I guess we would put Harry's book in the memoir category here.
I'm sure the royal family would put it in the memoir, not the factual autobiography.
So, but yeah, you know, you mentioned they probably made their money back and more, you know, and that was a thought I kept having throughout the book is it worth it? Are the millions of dollars worth ruining your relationship with your family? You know, he sort of poses this question in the book. You know, I guess the story is a message to his family. Are they listening to him and the pain that he's feeling? But I think he could have reached out to them and asked them those questions a little bit differently.
Can I say something really quick about that before I forget it? Because I will. You know what? I was having a conversation with somebody and they said this, and I agree with this. It feels like a petulant child who is upset with his family and keeps trying to get attention. So he yells and then they aren't noticing him. So he drops something and breaks it on the ground and they don't notice. It's just like it keeps ramping up and ramping up. Do you notice me now? Notice me now. Notice my pain now. And it just can't get much louder than spare. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so back to another comment that you made, you said you thought Charles got off rather easily. And I've heard a lot of other people commenting and saying the same thing. And my thought was, I didn't think Charles got off that easily. I think compared to William and Catherine and Camilla, he totally did. But no, I still thought he got it pretty tough. And I think some things were said in the book that would not go over well with Charles. And, you know, even like if you're attacking Camilla and William, I don't think Charles is going to like that either.
Especially Camilla.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know that he did get off so easily or that he would agree with that. You know, again, comments toward Kate, I thought were completely unnecessary. We know how much he loved Kate and was close with Kate in the past. And, you know, I feel like, I don't know, to your point, like, who was driving all of this and who was behind it? Like, what was the point of just dragging her through the mud like that and highlighting moments that, well, first of all, are very subjective, right? Like the lip gloss story, like, was he even there when that happened, or was that a story retold to him? You know, how do you interpret the way that someone responds in that situation, or if that's what they meant by that? Just totally unnecessary to include that in the book. And then, you know, back to the Nazi costume, I thought it was really interesting how he remembered so much about that story, but then couldn't remember what costume Kate wore. Like, I don't know. Like, that was kind of odd too. Like, just different. I don't know. His perspective there was interesting. So,
you know what I keep thinking of is the statement after the Oprah interview, recollections may vary. That's just what I keep thinking of over and over again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then again, with William, I have, you know, a lot of sympathy for him during this because I don't think he got it very fairly. And then the same thing we talked about at dinner the other night too was Megan is, you know, it's his wife, and I'm sure she read this book before it was
published. No question.
And I just wonder, you know, as his wife, you know, was she comfortable with everything that was shared in this book? Because I feel like I would have said, are you sure you want to include that? Like, I don't know that this is going to have the impact that you really want it to have, or that it's really necessary in this big picture. It may not help the story that you're trying to tell. And I had that same thought.
Exactly. So, I mean, I just, you know, does this help move your story forward? No. Like, there were many times that it just did not.
So we'll move on to the next question here that we've got. And we've talked about this a little bit already, but any other claims or anything you want to elaborate on in the book that maybe there seem to be some contradictions with reality?
Well, you sent this over to me and I can't remember where you sourced it from. But so I always have thought that the story that Megan has always told, she even told it in a documentary that was on HBO about her wedding dress, was that she has always said that to their first date, she wore a blue dress, and that she took the fabric from that blue dress and used it as her something blue in her wedding, which I intend to do that same. I mean, that's adorable. But in the book, Harry says that she was wearing, like, what is it, jeans and a black sweater or something like that. And so my thing is, like, you know, it's not just a rumor that she said the thing about the blue dress. I mean, it's in an HBO documentary. It's out there. And I think I've even reported on that before. And so, you know, who's fact checking them, you know? And then, like, and this just might be, you know, the memory is, especially around trauma, is weird, but, like, a lot of people are pointing out the Xbox contradiction, that Harry said that he got this Xbox for his birthday in 1997, but the Xbox didn't come out until 2001. I actually think it was a PlayStation. I think that, like, that's out there as well, that he got a PlayStation. But, you know, Harry's memory might be. But again, who is the fact checker here? Like, I just last night, working on a story for a magazine, I just had a fact checking call. I mean, there are people whose jobs are to be fact checkers. I can't imagine that Penguin Random House doesn't have a fact checker to say, like, oh, he meant the PlayStation. Did you? And then go back to Harry and say, did you mean PlayStation and not Xbox? Because Xbox didn't come out until 4 years later. The other thing is the curtsy thing. You know, in the docuseries, Megan said that she bombed the curtsy, but in the book, Harry says that Megan's curtsy was perfect, which everything Megan does to Harry is perfect. So that must be really nice, and probably also a lot of pressure to be so perfect in someone's eyes. Glad I don't have that problem. And then finally, the bridesmaid's dress fitting, you know, just like, I don't know. There were a lot of them. And so my thing is, you know, who is fact checking here? And I'd love to know what you think.
Yeah. I noticed the same thing about the dress on the first date. And I sent you something that I saw.
Yeah, you sent me that.
I will say, I will say it does say in the book that when they went out after that initial meeting, I think she wore like a blue and white striped dress or something. So maybe that's what she was referring to. Maybe she didn't consider their first meeting to be their first date. I'm not sure. Or maybe she figured it was close enough to the first date it counted. But yeah, I noticed that as well. And then, you know, I just feel like, a lot of what was said about the family just felt like an attack on character to me. And for me, the contradiction comes in with how we see them in real life. I feel like if they approached things as he's claiming that they do, there would be more people out there saying that they had negative experiences with the members of the family. And I don't hear that. I feel like they are, you know, especially Catherine, and William too. I feel like I always hear great stories when people have met them or people who are close to them. People haven't come out and said, yeah, exactly. And people haven't, you know, who are in their inner circles even. You know, there's always people who will leak to the media if they can, you know, and we haven't really seen that, you know, with, especially with Catherine, like, you know, everyone loves her. And, you know,
and Carrie loved her too. I want, like you said that, and that's so true. He adored her. And he even says that in the book, but like, anyway, you're going to talk about the lip gloss story, but that's just, I don't know. It just feels like sideswiping.
Well, you know, and back to the bridesmaid's dress story too. I read that exchange very differently than what I feel like people are interpreting or what maybe was being claimed in the book. To me, it felt like Catherine knows protocol. Catherine knows how things are supposed to go. And she was trying to help Meg. Like, I truly think that she was like, no, Megan, I'm telling you, you know, I've done the royal wedding thing before. I've looked at the dress. I'm telling you it has to be fixed. Like, trust me, take my word, you know, and she kept saying that. And, you know, Megan didn't want to and kind of basically said, if you got a problem with it, go deal with the tailor, you know, and I think it was a bigger issue than that. And I took it as Catherine was really trying to help her out. So the lip gloss
and I definitely
story,
don't think it warranted Megan ending up on the floor in tears. I mean, I'm a pretty sensitive person. And granted, there was a lot of other things going on with your dad and stuff at that time. Planning a wedding is stressful, but I don't know. It just feels like over dramatization to me.
Well, and we pretty much already touched on the lip gloss story. But you know, again, it's just, I think there's a lot of different ways that could be interpreted, and I don't even know if Harry actually saw that happen or if that was the story that was retold to him. So, yeah, a lot of things that just, you know, they don't seem to add up, and we unfortunately aren't going to hear from the royal family to set those things straight, which I do think is the right move. I don't think they need to do that because, again, reminding our listeners, part of the reason that you don't come up and respond to these sorts of claims is there's always going to be stuff out there in the media. There's always going to be claims, right, and they cannot respond to everyone. So if they pick one to respond to and then they don't on another one, that's going to fuel more rumors and speculation. So they tend to err on the side of not saying anything. And that's why.
Right. So, right.
All right. So on to the next question. What do you think is the state of, I guess, state of relationships at this point and going forward? Do you think there's going to be a chance of reconciliation? And do you think we'll see Harry and Meghan at the coronation?
Well, as Harry said himself, I think it was on Anderson Cooper, he's not on speaking terms at the moment with William or Charles, and vis-a-vis Camilla or Kate as well. So there really isn't a relationship right now. I mean, for the family's sake, I pray that there is a chance of reconciliation. But if I'm on the other side, and honestly, especially if I'm William, how can I trust you again? You know, how can I trust that? I read this, I can't remember where, I think it was in The Sun, that, you know, how could I trust that the words that I say to you won't end up in the paperback edition or volume two or whatever it is, you know? And I did read, I think this was also in the Sun as well, that they are looking to have some peace talks with Harry before the coronation. Harry, I think, will be invited. I've heard both sides of that coin, but it is the monarch's son. I think he will be invited. Whether they will attend, I don't know that. And I think Harry said that himself. It will depend on what happens between now and then. That is Archie's birthday. They could beg out and say, oh, it's our son's birthday, we're going to stick around in California. I just think it's going to, their attendance at the coronation will depend on what happens in the next, what is it, 3.5 months, something like that. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I also feel the same way about not being able to trust Harry and Meghan. You know, it feels like every time they've had a conversation, something has gotten out there, it's gotten leaked, or it's been twisted, you know, maybe a little from reality or very one-sided. So how do you have a conversation in confidence that it's
going to, I don't know if you can. I really don't know if you can, because it just seems like you brought up earlier, the almighty dollar is above family to Harry. And I'm not even going to include Meghan in this conversation about spare, because this is on Harry. You know, I mean, we've talked about Meghan a little bit, but like, I'm talking about Harry in this instance. Like, I think that the almighty dollar is winning, and that makes me really sad. It really does.
Well, right now, if I had to take a guess, my guess would be I don't think we'll see them at the coronation. Although I think I said I didn't think we would see them at the Jubilee, and they were there. I know that a lot has happened since then, but I don't know. We'll wait and see. And I really, truly, truly hope there is reconciliation.
Oh,
I don't
me
know
too.
If it'll happen tomorrow. I don't know if it'll happen in the next year or when it will happen. But I really, really hope that is in the future.
And Harry seems to think that is possible. And I hope he's right. But, you know, if I'm William, I don't know how I can come back from that, to be honest with you.
On to the next question. Was there anything that really stood out to you from the book as far as any moments? I know we've talked about this a little bit, but sympathy for Harry and Meghan, or anything that, you know, maybe frustrated you or you felt strongly about that you want to dig into a little bit here?
Well, I mean, it's impossible to not empathize with Harry when his mother dies. And, you know, it's painful to read that he thought that she was faking her death for years and years and couldn't believe that it was real. I mentioned this before. I found it interesting that the book started with her death. Like, it's almost as though anything before that doesn't even register to him, which is sad because that's 12 years of your life just kind of erased and evaporated. To the moments of frustration or disagreement, I thought some of the William anecdotes, I guess, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say that telling a story about, you know, your brother beating you up moves the narrative of your life forward. But some of the things about William were just below the belt hits several times. The comment about his alarming baldness, him being drunk or at minimum tipsy on the morning of his wedding to Kate. I found the anecdote about how the royal family wanted to, so Catherine or Kate, even though Kate is K-A-T-E, her birth name is Catherine Elizabeth Middleton with a C. And I thought the anecdote about Charles and Camilla, whose names also obviously start with a C, wanting to change the spelling of Catherine to Catherine with a K, I thought that was incredibly compelling. Also, I don't know. This is Harry's hero worship of Meghan coming out again, I think. But the anecdote about Kate and William being starstruck over meeting Meghan. I mean, look, Suits is a popular show, or was a popular show. Meghan was on it. She was one of the stars of the show. But just, I mean, these are, Kate and William are people that meet dignitaries and the most famous people in the world on a regular basis. To say that they were starstruck over meeting what a B at best list actress would, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. So, I don't know. I mean, this is a great example of how recollections may vary. Everything is told through an individual lens, and I don't think that William and Kate would have told most of those stories the same way.
Yeah. And, you know, that goes back to perspective, and his truth is not necessarily the truth. And, you know, I mean, you've made a lot of great points here. I think I've pretty much already shared my feelings on this. I felt like, again, I did really feel for him in some of the experiences that he's had through his life that were really hard. You know, I don't think anyone deserves to be harassed, in the way that he claims, you know, he and really all of the women that he dated throughout his life were, you know, I tried to put myself in their shoes, and I thought, you know, I think probably a lot of us think, well, couldn't you put up with the press harassment a little bit if you're going to marry, you know, a prince, you know, wouldn't they be able to tolerate it a little bit? But then I go back and think, you know what, if I was dating somebody and the next day media was camped outside of my family members' homes to the point mm-hmm. where they couldn't leave, and I at least had some protection within the walls of a castle or a gate at a palace, you know, but none of that protection was provided to my family, I don't think I could do it either. So I, you know, I really do understand how hard that is, you know, both for him, you know, losing people who are important to him because of that. And for the women who had to go through that, I cannot imagine, you know, how scary that might feel.
Yeah.
And so I did really feel for him and the women in his story when he shared that. But
and that's another thing that I found interesting. The Chelsea and Cressida bits were very compelling to me.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. And I enjoyed hearing those stories. You know, but again, the disagreement part comes in with how I just felt like the comments toward his family were attacks on their character, and I didn't think it was fair. I agree with you. I feel like it was below the belt, and I wish that those parts had been left out. So
yeah, I agree.
All right. So overall, should Harry have written this book? What do you think his motive was? What should he have done differently?
Ooh, that's a heavy question. Should he have written this book? Look, you have the right, Harry, to write whatever you want and do whatever you want. Would I have done it this way? No. What do I think his motive was? I don't think his motive was money, although I do think that that was a very nice perk and that didn't hurt. I think his motive was to get his truth out and be heard and seen by the royal family in a way that they could not ignore him. And I mean, hey, he did that. What should he have done differently? I mean, I think that I wish his book, I don't know. I mean, I've said this once, I've said it 100 times. I wish that the book was more about him, and it was about him, but you know, there's a lot in there about other people. And he said in follow-up interviews that he had to include anecdotes about these other people because they color his story. Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, again, there's just some parts that obviously were put in to sell copies of the book. It accomplished that goal. So if that's your goal, then good for you. But again, we've said this before, at what price?
Yeah, I agree. I think there is a place for him to write a book about his life and the things that have impacted his life. So I think, should he have written a book? Yeah, absolutely. But I would have loved to have seen the book focus more on, you know, if he wanted to talk about the impact of, you know, losing his mother, and even, you know, how his life has been shaped as a royal, feeling trapped by, you know, media harassment, or like he didn't have the same freedom that maybe someone who didn't grow up in that life had. I think he could touch on those in the book. And I think really hearing those stories about him in Africa and how he connected with life there, and just, you know, beautiful pictures of mm-hmm. seeing the wildlife and laying under the stars, you know, I really enjoyed those parts of the book. I loved Absolutely. It. Hearing about, you know, all of his experience, his passion for helping, you know, members of the military and veterans and the causes that are close to him. I would have loved to have had that be the full focus of the book
Absolutely.
And just left out the private parts of the family
Yes.
and the drama, because I agree, while those do sell, I think his real story and you know, who he really is lies in some of these other parts of the book that I truly did really
Yes.
enjoy reading. So that's what I think he could have done differently, is maybe leave out those personal parts. And I agree, I don't think the motive was money. It certainly always helps, but I do feel like he is trying in a lot of different ways to get his perspective out there and reach his family, and he's getting creative with how he's doing that.
Yes,
but
you said it
I
so perfectly. I wanted more of that, of the Africa, of his military experience. That's what I wanted. You know, I didn't want the below the belt hits.
yeah and I will tell him, you know, Harry, if you're listening,
Yeah, I was gonna say, you will tell him. You're gonna call him up tonight and let him know.
I really truly am glad that I listened to this audiobook and heard his story. And I really do feel like there were some really wonderful parts to the book. So, you know, great job on that. I just
Yeah, it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all bad. But when it was bad, it was really, really bad, you know?
Yeah, I would have left the personal family stuff out. So all right. Well, we'll go on. We've got a couple questions here left and then we'll wrap it up. So any thoughts on, you know, his overall sort of journey, where he is today, how his experiences, you know, maybe have shaped him, and what the future holds for him and Megan?
I mean, like we just said, I loved hearing about his journey and his, you know, his story, like those Africa anecdotes, beautiful, you know, getting inside Afghanistan. That was fascinating, compelling. He's led quite a life, and he's not even 40 years old. You know, he's not even, I think he's 38. And so he's not even halfway, prayerfully, not even halfway through his life. I think that he is very happy now. I think he's very at peace now. He's certainly found the right person for him. And he's in California and has the family that he's always wanted. And my hope is that the next chapter for Harry and Meghan is less about, basically, even though they're no longer working members of the royal family, living still in the royal family, because that's what they're talking about in the docuseries and the book, so on. It's just not stop living in the past and embrace this beautiful life that you've created for yourself in California and be happy. Let's not live in the past anymore. Let's go forward and forge a new future.
Yeah, you know, I think people overall, the public as a whole, were really excited to see them together and to see them get married, and we're you know, really happy for Harry to have found Meghan and for that relationship. And I think they still, you know, still are. You know, but going back to another contradiction that we've talked about before, they continue to say that they want privacy. And you know, at the end of the day, there's a trade-off, right? When you put yourself out there as a public figure and you release very personal books with really personal stories, and you do lots of interviews and you do Netflix series, you are trading off privacy. You know, you're sort of opening yourself up. And so I feel like for them going forward in the future, I would love to see them really take a step back and consider maybe, you know, what they could have done a little bit differently, and what they want going forward for them and their children. If they really want privacy, consider how they could really step back and embrace that and maybe focus on some of these other passions that they have, some charitable initiatives or other projects that they're involved in. Or at least if they like the spotlight, then, you know, maybe not say that they want to live a really private life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, their press person spokesperson has spoken out about this and said they never wanted to live a private life. They just wanted to do it on their terms. But still, it's like, I'll call out the Live to Lead on Netflix. I loved that. That's the kind of stuff I want to see from Harry and Meghan. That was really good. The Heart of Invictus, which is coming out in the summer, same story. So let's focus on projects like that and stop focusing on William has alarming baldness and Kate grimaced when she gave Meghan some of her lip gloss. I don't like, let's not be petty and let's just embrace the fact that you found the love of your life. You have two beautiful children. You're living in an idyllic setting in California. You're multi millionaires. Thanks in no small part to this book. Go be happy. Go make a difference. Go run with Archwell and do your thing and put positivity and compassion in the world. Let's not live within the confines of most especially the, what was it, 18 months when Harry and Meghan were married from May of 2018 to January of 2020 when all of the storm happened. We've said our piece. Let's move on.
Yeah. And I, you know, I totally agree. There's a difference in, you know, having maybe not as private of a life versus being harassed by the media. Nobody would condone media harassment for sure. But when you put yourself in the spotlight, when you go on television and, you know, you have shows and books, you do give up a little bit of that privacy.
Yeah, you open the door for sure.
So last question here, and we have taken up an hour.
I know. I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, I think it's 30 minutes and we just can't ever seem to do that because we just like to talk. So here we are.
So what do we expect to see or hear from the monarchy, if anything? Do we think this book has caused long-term damage or do we think it will change anything for the monarchy?
I don't think we're going to hear or see anything from the monarchy, at least not right now. I'll put myself out on a limb and say I don't think that this is going to cause long-term damage for the monarchy. Will it cause change? I hope so. I mean, I hope there's some positive changes that can happen within the system, especially when it comes to by the time that George and Charlotte and Louis are getting married. I hope that we can welcome women into the family because this is Meghan's entree into the family was on another level because, as Harry said, and he's right, it did involve race, and that's a whole other level. But Camilla, Kate, Diana, Fergie, all of these women faced harassment from the press and maltreatment from the press. So I'm thinking about George, you know, when he gets married and he's 9, so that's going to be a bit. I hope that's, you know, as far as change, I hope we figure some things out to welcome women and men into the family. But for whatever reason, women seem to struggle more entering into the family. And it's because of the press. And Harry clearly hates the press. And who wouldn't hate the press if you were Harry? I mean, the press didn't have, we've not even talked about the anecdote of, like, you know, Harry driving through the Alma Tunnel, which I told all of you listeners and you, Jessica, that I did that, and going, you know, looking at the crime scene photos of his mother's accident. I mean, and the photographers are still snapping photos the whole time. He clearly has such hatred towards the press. It's justified. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that the monarchy is in jeopardy after this book, but do I think that they can read the book and, if they're thoughtful and mindful, take some of the criticisms about the institution, about the firm, and make them better? I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I hope that this book is not for nothing. And Harry said in the Sunday Times interview that, you know, he hopes that, obviously, he, you know, the title of the book is Spare. He mentions that Charles called him the Spare on the day of his birth, and he was called the Spare all throughout his life, and that's damaging, and that he hopes that Charlotte and Louis don't have those same issues. So if that's a change that can come from this, then that's great. I mean, I pray that positivity comes from this book. I hope reconciliation is on the table, but we'll just have to see.
I think the monarchy will weather this storm as they have weathered many other storms in the past. So I don't know that we'll see long-term damage from just from this book. And to your point, will things change? I don't know. That's certainly a question that I'm not really sure how to answer. But, you know, it's been around for a long time, and I think it will continue to be around. But
I do too.
That is our last question. That wraps up our review of
That was exhausting. That was much more exhausting than I thought it would be.
We made it a full hour here. So if you're still hanging around listening, thank you very much. And listeners, if you have your own thoughts that you want to share with us, or if there's anything that we said that you want to elaborate on or let us know your feelings toward, please let us know. You can always send us an email or a DM on Instagram and we'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. Before we close it out, anything else, Rachel?
I don't think so. I wonder what our episode in 2 weeks will be. I wonder if we're going to start hearing more from the royals now that, you know, the interviews are over, the book is out. I wonder if we're going to get back to normalcy or what the next 2 weeks or the next month is going to look like.
Yeah, I think we will. And if not, we've got another exciting interview coming your way very soon.
We've got some good interviews coming up. I know I always say that, but we always deliver the good interviews. So stay tuned.
All right. Well, listeners, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Podcast Royal. Email us at hellopodcastroyal@gmail.com. And of course, please follow, rate, and review our podcast. We always appreciate those 5 stars. And thank you so, so much for tuning into episode 82 of Podcast Royal. Bye.
Bye.